Hello and welcome to History in Reverse, a father-daughter science fiction podcast. Today we will be discussing the DreamWorks 2024 film, The Wild Robot. Hello and welcome to History in Reverse. My name is Caroline. I'm here with my father, Richie.
Hello.
And we are discussing The Wild Robot, the DreamWorks film that just came out in 2024. You might have heard me say that a few seconds ago.
Yeah, we were gone for a while for various reasons. But when this movie appeared, it seemed like an appropriate topic.
Yes, because it reminded me immediately of the short story we read previously. Oh, goodness. It had the short story that had the long name.
A novella, you're thinking of.
Yes.
Sound for the Wild Build.
Yes.
Which had wild robots, story. Yeah.
Yeah, I like this wild robot trend. I'm here for it. It's kind of an offshoot of steampunk, I think, which we can certainly talk about. But did you want to talk about a bit of the history of the movie? It seems like it's based on a book series.
Not so much. What I want to talk about is a couple of things that kind of popped out to me as we started watching the movie. So first of all, we talked about robots, but I don't think we talked about where the word robot comes from. It originated in a play written by a Czechoslovakian playwright in 1920. Mm-hmm. And it was a play called RUR, which stood for Rozum Universal Robots. Mm-hmm. And robot in Polish and in Czech and Slavic languages, robota means work.
Oh, interesting.
Rozum in Polish and the Czech, Rozum means the mind.
Interesting.
We should probably either read that play at some point or watch.
That would be fun, yeah.
There might be even like a YouTube production or something. Mm-hmm. Because that play introduced the robots into science fiction.
Mm-hmm. So, we should definitely do that then, yeah, to get the origin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, these kind of wild robot stories that are beginning to crop up both in literature and in now film are sort of exploring that concept of, the origin of life and, what is life? You know, nice deep meanings in children's films. love to see that. So it does look like The Wild Robot was based, this movie particularly, is based on a trilogy called The Wild Robot.
Oh, is it?
I know that only because it's at the top of the Wikipedia article.
So we
have not read the books. Maybe something we look into seeing if it's worth the read. The movie was excellent. I thought the movie was excellent.
Well, it was a children's movie and an animated movie, right? So that was the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we watched it with Mom. for our wonderful listeners who've been here for a long time, obviously myself and my father are both very big science fiction fans, but my mother, his wife, is not the biggest science fiction fan, but she really liked the movie too. So I was glad about that. And so it's a animated, computer animated story. And like many a DreamWorks film, it has its tear-wrenching moments. And I thought it was very well written. So do you want to get into discussing what happened in the film?
Yeah, I just wanted to say a thing or two about the setting. So... Mm-hmm. When I saw the previews of the movie, I assumed that the action was taking place on some other planet, right?
Mm-hmm. So did I.
And it turned out not to be true. It turned out it was like an island somewhere, but it appeared to be the Earth, right?
So. So that's the interesting thing is when the movie starts, we open with a robot who we don't know yet becoming active.
Well, it opens with a crash scene, right? So there's on the seashore where the waves coming in, and there's what looks like a wreck of what I assume was a spaceship or some transport. And there's pieces scattered of things. And there's this robot kind of partially falling out of this container. And was it raccoons who were playing on it? No, those were otters.
Otters start with it. Yeah, otters start out with the robot. But I thought the same thing. I thought it was a robot that was being shipped interstellarly through space that accidentally crash landed on a planet. I wasn't sure. It didn't occur to me till later in the movie that it was Earth.
Right.
And we'll certainly get to that point when we find that out. I wonder if that's kind of part of the trick of the movie, was to make you think this was some distant problem, but in fact, it is a problem quite close to home, in fact. So the robot activates, and a good chunk of that first part of that movie is the robot just being around in nature.
Well, so the robot apparently was built to, solve problems. Mm-hmm. And it gets up and says, "Hi, I'm Razum."
Yeah, I'm Razum, whatever numbers come after it. It's the fancy name of the, it's the Razum's unit 7134.
Right. And he says, "I'm Razum, unit 7134. I am here to solve all your problems. Please assign me tasks."
Yes, and that the Razum always completes their tasks.
That's right.
They never abandon the task. And the robot goes around asking various animals in the woods what tasks she can help complete. And
and they run away, screaming.
And the animals are like, "Oh, shit."
There's just one thing I want to, you're calling the robot she. Mm-hmm. To me, a robot is always a he, and took me a long time through the movie before I realized that it was, a she, although it's mm-hmm. technically an it. But one mm-hmm. of the reasons is that, again, in Polish language, nouns have a gender. Mm-hmm. A robot is a male-gendered noun. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, I think I was thinking about that because you and I had talked about this on the phone briefly, and I actually assumed it was a she. From the moment that Roz starts speaking. And I was thinking about why. And I actually assumed it was a she because it was a helper robot. Because it said, "How can I help you?"
Uh-huh.
And all of our modern technology that's helpful is female. Alexa, Google stuff is all female voices.
Excuse me.
They are.
No, you can change them.
You could change them, but the defaults are all female voices. GPSs are female voices unless you change them. I mean, and that's how they started, too, years and years ago when, the TomTom first started and everything like that. Yeah. So it was interesting because I made that assumption because of what Roz said. And then I think the voice, whoever voiced Roz,
voiced by a woman, although it was hard to tell.
Yeah, it's a very automated sounding voice, yeah. Who voices? Lupita Nyong'o voices Roz.
Yeah, I had no idea who she was.
Oh, she's a great actor. I love her. She's in she's in some really good horror movies. She's great. Mm-hmm. But so Roz, Roz is, running around the woods and tries to
talk to the animals, and of course,
they all run writers around. The writers of the movie said, "Let's get over this communications problem by having Roz learn the language of all the beasts of the forest."
So Roz basically kind of plants itself and listens and goes through the learning. It's kind of funny because currently in all the AI hype that's going around, I don't know mm-hmm. how much you've heard about it, but large part of the AI that exists today is something called training, where they mm-hmm. you train the models, where basically you feed it lots of data and it does whatever it does. So this was kind of an interesting way to do it.
Yeah. When we were watching it, I was sort of thinking of that scene in 1984. And what we also saw in Solaris, where the main character sits down and reads a book and learns. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. For the plot to work, Roz has to be able to talk to the animals. But it doesn't make sense for Roz to be able to talk to the animals unless Roz sits and learns the language. So they do a little montage of Roz just listening until the little loading bar fills up, basically, and she can speak
the
language of the beasts of the forest.
You can see the sounds, and then eventually that they become words, and you can
it was really cute. I was like, all right, I got it. It's a universal translator. I got it. it's Hoshi on the Enterprise saying, "I just need a little bit more, and then I can translate it." That's cute. So she's trying to learn. No, she does in fact learn the language, and she continues to try to help until she super does not help.
Well, so she, the animals still kind of run away from her, try to knock her over. And mm-hmm. At one point, she makes sort of friends with this fox, right?
She does eventually, but before she makes friends with the fox, she does a little whoopsie-doodle murder. and she kills.
Was it like during a storm or something where she was?
I forget exactly how it happens. I recall. She's trying to help the animals. Mm-hmm. And this is like when the raccoons are messing with her and they're like pulling out her parts and stuff like that. Right. And she's trying to get her parts back. And I, at that point, I thought like, oh, this movie is going to be about her trying to get her parts back. But I was wrong. And she falls sort of down a cliff and lands on a nest and crushes all of the geese and all but one egg in the nest. And then the plot becomes Horton hatches an egg and she learns the power of motherhood.
All right. So when she gets the egg, That's when the fox appears, because fox would like to eat the egg.
Mm-hmm. The one thing about this movie, like, it was a children's movie, but like there was quite a lot of death.
There was talk about death. There was nobody really actually dying, though.
Well, the eggs.
There were eggs, so.
Yeah, and the adult goose that dies in that nest. But the fox ends up being named Fink, and he is initially attempting to eat the egg, and then Roz is like, no, don't eat the egg. And I think it's Fink that tells her, like, well, that's your task now. Like, having this egg is your task now. She's like, ah, yes, a task. This is what I need. And so she begins to raise this egg, which hatches into a little baby gosling. And she says, this is no problem. I have three tasks. I have to get it to eat, get it to swim, and get it to fly.
Right.
If it eats, swims, and flies, it's a goose. Excellent. Done. And then shenanigans ensue.
And it was a bit of a runt goose, so it's like...
Yeah. Yeah, that's another part of the plot, is that not only is this goose being raised by a robot, but other animals in the forest tell her, like, he was the runt of the eggs. Even with his, like, real mom, quote-unquote, he wouldn't have survived, because he was never destined to, like, be actually able to do these things. He's too small.
Right.
To live. So that, you know, there's an interesting talk amongst the animals about like nature and life.
There was a very funny part where the opossum mother was giving advice.
Yes, yes. Roz runs into the opossum mother. I forget her name. Pinktail, I think, was her name. And she has a whole bunch of babies attached to her. If anyone knows real opossums in real life, when they have their babies, they like, you know, latch on and they carry them around, and the opossum mother is trying to give her advice, and it's just very funny, like, you know, you don't really know what's going on, nobody really knows, you're kind of making it up as you go along, sort of thing.
Right. The other funny part was where, you know, the opossum played dead when they are threatened by something. So while she was with the babies and they met Roz, mm-hmm. the babies were playing dead, but it's like they were not doing it right.
Yeah, they were announcing what they died from. They were like, I died from cholera. it was very, very cute. And then at one point, there's like a fake out that maybe one of the babies dies kind of off screen. And the mom's like, she's like, I have seven kids. And then there's like a sound and she's like, six kids. And then that baby comes crawling back. And she's like, no, I'm alive, mom. And she's like, oh, okay. It's like a really interesting... I think it's an important juxtaposition for like themes, but we'll get there.
So then she builds a house, right? Roz builds a nice mm-hmm. house for her, the goose, and the fox. So the fox kind mm-hmm. of befriends her grudgingly.
Yeah. Because the fox realizes that he can eat pretty easy with Roz around, because Roz is trying to get this baby duck, not duck, goose sorry, right. to eat. And the fox is like, oh, maybe he'll eat, like, clams. And then she like, gets them. And obviously, the baby goose won't eat clams, but the fox will. And so he kind of, like, gets, like, an easy meal out of this friendship. And he's like, and he tells her, he's like, yeah, I'm a goose expert. I can help you with this. Like, he's, you know, an expert at eating geese, not an expert at raising geese. And she ends up naming the duck, the goose, Brightbill.
Brightbill, right.
And it's her first creative thing that she does. Because she tries to name him, like, Unit 00001 or something. And Fink says, no, 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 no. You have to give him a real name. So she succeeds at task one, getting Brightbill to eat.
Right.
And
then she tries to teach him to swim, right? Mm-hmm. And he kind of swims, but in a really very odd way. Like he pushes himself with the wings on the water, which is kind of...
Yeah, it's like he's like how a human would swim, basically using your arms. Like he's trying to use his wings like arms because probably Roz was trying to teach him how to swim, and she's modeled after a human.
Right.
So, you know, that's what she would do in it. He ends up going to meet the other geese, and they're not so accepting of him.
They kind of bully him and make fun of him.
Mm-hmm. And they make fun of him for being small, and like, you know, they call him a runt, and that's sort of when it becomes obvious that the issue is not only the robot mom, the issue is that how he was born, being a real impediment in this wilderness that they're in, this very dangerous wilderness that they're in.
It's actually, the wilderness itself is quite beautiful. It's like, you know, all this mm-hmm. forest and trees and sea. It's mm-hmm. not clear even that's an island or anything.
The animals reference it as an island.
Right.
But we don't ever see it as an island, but it's referenced as... I mean, they could just mean like island as in like our area. There's a few other animals that we meet along the way that turn out to be important. So there's the beaver who's working on chewing down the tallest tree.
Right.
In the forest, who is voiced by, if any of you watch What We Do in the Shadows, the actor who plays Laszlo.
Yes.
voices this beaver, and he has a very distinct voice, and he uses the exact same voice as this beaver that he uses on What We Do in the Shadows. And he's like seen as the crazy old man because he's been chewing at the tallest tree in the forest forever, and everyone's like, oh yeah, it's totally going to come down someday. Yeah, you got it. Like, uh-huh, sure. And he's like, it's the odd form.
Then there's the bear.
There's also a bear who's big and threatening.
Voiced by Mark Hamill.
Yes. Oh, there's some great, like, they got so many good voices out here.
The fox was Pedro Pascal.
Okay, Pedro Pascal. And Brightbill is Kit Connor, who is one of the main characters in Netflix's show Heartstopper that he got very famous from. He plays Nick Nelson.
Okay.
Kit Connor plays Nick Nelson in Heartstopper. Kit Connor also sounds like a fake name, so I get a little confused. He's very nice. Seems like a very nice young man. I was glad he got a role doing something else. There's a bunch of famous... Catherine O'Hara is one of the people... as well. There's a bunch in there that are great. So they're sort of working on swimming, and kind of in the middle of this, Roz decides to go and like search out like how she got there. Oh, one other thing we should say. Roz has a homing beacon in her head that she was going to use to contact like seemingly the factory or something to like, come pick her up. But she didn't activate it yet because she got Brightbill, and she got the task of raising Brightbill. So she hasn't flagged.
Well, what happened
that she
was the beacon that she had got broken.
Yes.
Probably by some animal.
Yeah, I think it got broken in.
No, was it maybe
in the beginning?
Yeah, maybe Brightbill even broke it.
I don't recall off the top of my head. Somebody broke it.
So at one point, what she. She goes to the crash site, and there are some other parts from other robots. And actually, she gets to, you know, play a little video.
Yeah, yeah. And she sat down and read a book, and the book said, "This is the backstory of the world."
And she gets another beacon. But I think so. The next thing with Brightbill, though, you know, she discovers that they have to migrate. The geese have to migrate, which includes flying, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, just before we get to that, mm-hmm. when she goes to look through the wreckage, mm-hmm. she meets another robot who's briefly functional.
Right.
And that robot, like, they have a conversation, and the robot's like, how are you doing this? Like, how are you doing these things that you're describing with Brightbill? And Roz reveals that she's been overwriting her own code for weeks, learning how to do this. So it's kind of introducing at that point. I mean, we've sort of seen it up until then as she cares more and more for Brightbill, but introducing this concept that she's sort of like breaking out of her code and like maybe becoming a little too sentient.
She has free will.
Oh, Whoops. Whoops. Google didn't intend that for its robots. So then the next thing is, so she taught him how to eat. She more or less taught him how to swim. And the next thing is fly, because the geese have to migrate
right.
To the mating grounds for the winter.
And I think amongst the geese, there was like the older goose who was kind of sympathetic to Brightbill and kind of gave him some advice. Mm-hmm. And suggested I get a flight instructor.
Yes. Which I thought, did you like that part of the film? Because yeah. for people that don't know, my father flies planes. And I was wondering when we were watching that, I'm like, I wonder if that's the kind of flight instructor my dad had. So you want to talk about the flight instructor?
Let's see, I'm trying to look up his name. So it was a hawk. Hawks, among other things, they do pretty fancy flying. Like hawks like to fly very high, and when they see prey, they just dive like mad. And Thunderbolt was the name of the
Thunderbolt.
It was Falcon. So it's Peregrine Falcon. Yeah. So actually, falcons are probably one of the fastest birds in amongst the birds, because they can dive very quickly. So so he was teaching Brightbill how to fly, not like a goose, but like a falcon.
Yeah.
So,
and some of the scenes are awesome. Like they do a dive where they fly very, very high up and then they dive down. And it's scary to watch, like from the way that they angle the camera and do the animation. It's really, really beautiful. So he gets
him ready for the migration. And I think,
well, part of the flight sequence that was really touching, like this movie has several like pull out your heartstrings kind of moments. And one was definitely the flying scene, because to learn how to fly, Brightbill, Roz builds a runway out of stone so that she can put Brightbill on her shoulder and run really fast, and then he can kind of get the air and like take off. And so she's like teaching him, she's like carrying him and teaching him how to fly while he's taking off. And it's a very extremely sweet, and when you can like sort of like really see the bond between them like really forming. Now, they did have a little bit of a tiff at one point, Roz and Brightbill, because she hadn't told Brightbill that she killed his parents.
Right.
And he finds that out like eventually when he realizes like his mother is not in fact a robot. And he is upset about that. So that happens around the time that she's teaching him how to swim. And he's like, you know, it's not a phase, Mom. You're not my real mom. Kind of thing. But then she helps teach him how to fly. And like, they never really talk about like what happened and what he said.
Right.
But they like bond during the flight sequences and stuff like that. So you can sort of see that developing.
So she gets him ready to migrate, and he goes, and kind of the old goose, what was his name? Longneck. Basically kind of, so to speak, took him under his wing.
Yeah, do you get it?
And they all take off migration. And when he leaves, he says, am I going to see you when I come back in the spring? Mm-hmm. And Roz says no, because she intends to go back.
Yeah. And it's at this point in time in the movie that I thought, well, that's a perfectly fine theme for a children's movie is, you know, be kind, be helpful, and, you know, accept your place in the world kind of thing. And I thought Brightbill was going to fly off with the geese, and Roz was going to go home. And I thought the movie was going to end at that point. I was wrong.
But no.
But no, there's a third act, as there always is.
So as the geese flew south, I suppose. So, well, do you want to talk about Adventure of the Geese or Adventures on the Island?
The geese are shown first.
Okay.
So it's sequentially in the movie. So the geese, so this is where we discover that we're on Earth. Because the geese are migrating, and while they're migrating, we're getting shots of things that are landmarks.
No, I mean, we see San Francisco Bay, right? And
and
you can see that this is like the future Earth, where something has gone wrong, because you see the shot of San Francisco Bay with the Golden Gate Bridge underwater.
Underwater with whales swimming
around
it.
There.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was like a really cool shot, and it was one of those shots where I was kind of like, so much was communicated to the audience through like just that, and it was like 3 to 5 seconds of screen time. And I was like, that's how you storytell. You know, like so much was told to me in that. Like, okay, we're on Earth, we're in the future, some shit went down, like that, like, some, like, who, like, where are the people? What are they doing? How are they alive? You know, are they the ones that made the robot? You know, like, there's so many things. Meanwhile, there's all of this nature that's proliferating that we've seen up until this point in the movie. So it's really interesting juxtaposition.
So there's like a storm breaks out, right? And as they're trying to fly through the storm, they come upon what looks like a city.
Yeah, they come upon some kind of like what I assume are human buildings. Do we ever see any actual humans in the story, in the movie, come to think of it? We see robots.
Right. I don't think so.
They're growing food. So the geese come across this.
So
like,
it seems to be like a dome kind of a city where they wind up flying through vents or something to get inside there. And they come in there and it's kind of nice. And there's like a cornfield with robots attending them. And they kind of land in the fields. And Longneck says, just hide. Let's wait past the storm and then we'll get out of here. But
and the robots look like Roz.
Right.
So the same.
So Bright Bill thinks that he introduces himself to one of the robots.
Yeah.
And sadly, whoops, these robots don't think of Roz as a friend, but they said vermin.
Yep. So this, I do find this to be a bit of a plot hole, that the response the response that the farming robots have to geese being inside is to shoot their guns all over the place. And they're like shooting at the geese and there's like lasers flying and things inside are getting destroyed. Like they're destroying their own building and like crops are getting ruined because there's geese inside. Like it was a very strange way overreaction.
Well, maybe because they've never seen geese before, so they had no idea.
For a building that was that easy for them to infiltrate, though, there's no way that they don't have animals inside there if it was that easy to infiltrate. Like, that's the thing. It's like, if it had been, like, much harder for them to get inside or something like that, I could make an excuse for it, but it's okay. It's a DreamWorks children's movie. I don't need to nitpick. It's just in my nature.
Anyway, at this point, you know, to get the geese out, you have to do some fancy flying. So Longneck tells Bright Bill, you can lead these geese out of here. I'll hold the robots off. Right,
right, because Bright Bill's not afraid of the robots.
He's not afraid. Also, he can do some fancy flying to dodge and stuff. So he does. He leads them out of this place. And sadly, Longneck remains and apparently is killed. We don't see him getting killed or anything like that.
We see him getting shot. We see them trying to shoot Bright Bill and Longneck diving in front. So it seems like Longneck sacrificed himself to save Bright Bill. Which, like, what a hero. R.I.P.
So meanwhile, back on the island.
Meanwhile, Roz goes home, right? That's it, right? She activates her beacon and she goes home. No big deal.
I think, does she try to go home? She's kind of sad. But then the winter starts.
Yeah. So at some point she does activate her beacon because they respond later. Right. So I forget if it's here, but at some point in time after Bright Bill leaves, she does activate her beacon. But then
she changes her mind.
She turns it off because the snow has come and it's a really rough winter. And she has a house that she built with a fireplace. So she and Fink start gathering up
all the
various animals.
Right.
Yeah. Into little snowy Noah's Ark and save all the animals from freezing. It's like a really bad winter. Even the bear is in really bad shape.
And the funniest part is, you know, the animals, you know, you mixing, you know, prey.
Yeah.
And the predator, you know, what could go wrong?
They're all in this house trying to eat each other the whole time. And I think it's Fink who yells at them and is like, come on, guys. Like, because Roz's battery is dying.
Right, and she needs some, I guess, daylight or good weather to recharge.
Right, exactly. Yeah, she has a couple of different forms of power, but over time, she loses pieces, like physical pieces of her robot body. And one of the things she loses at some point is like a power cell. But she can be powered by the sun, but since it's winter and very snowy and stormy, just hasn't been.
Remember
sun,
early
so she
on,
eventually
she lost like a piece of her leg, and the beaver made her a new leg from a piece of wood.
It's super cool. The visuals are great, and I think the progress of Roz from like shiny new robot to the end of her time in the forest is a really interesting contrast, because she gets like scratches and she loses parts and she gets the new leg, and there's like a lot of stuff like that. But she ends up saving all the animals,
right?
Because they survive the winter because of her. And when the spring comes and the sun comes through, she does wake up because she gets power back.
Right. And then they live happily ever after?
Mm-hmm. And nothing bad ever happened, and certainly nothing was on fire at the end of this movie.
So at this point, I think spring comes and the geese come back.
Mm-hmm.
Bride Bill meets Roz again, so that is a happy reunion.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bright Bill comes back, and it turns out he led the geese to the mating grounds and back.
Right.
And he's like their new leader, and everyone's like, yay, Bright Bill, and all this stuff. Then he sees Fink, and Fink's like, Roz is still here. She waited for you. But at the same time, wouldn't you know it, the ship from maybe the human world, the factory ship, has finally arrived.
Right.
To take Roz back. And a very spooky little robot tries to take Roz back, a little octopus robot.
So this robot was called Vantra, mm-hmm. which stood for Virtual Observational Neutralizing Troublesome Retrieval and Authority. we talked about Binti, that book.
Mm-hmm.
The aliens and Binti are like that robot.
Oh, interesting.
So if you ever get to read it,
I want to read that story. Yeah, that's the next one I want to read.
Yeah, I'll talk more about some other stuff that I found similar to. But anyway, so basically a big battle begins because she tries to take Roz back, saying, all this programming you've done, we really want to know it. We want it, you know. And we're going to extract it from you.
Mm-hmm. Right. So she tries to more or less wipe Roz's memory. And then the creatures of the forest fight back, basically.
Right.
It's like a large battle. The ship sets fire to stuff. They land troops. There's like robot troops that land in the forest trying to get Roz back. It's like a really big endeavor to like get back a robot. It's a very, I don't know, a bit of an overreaction in my opinion, but who knows. There's an interesting bit, if you remember, on the ship, where, because Bright Bill gets onto the ship to try to save Roz, but they were trying to erase Roz's like new code. Basically, they're trying to extract it. And from what I understood of the movie, they did, but they couldn't because Roz always remembered her love for Bright Bill.
Right. Love conquers all.
Love conquers all, exactly, yeah. And so he rescues her, but she can't, like, her memory can't be wiped. Like, her circuitry has been, you know, changed to an extent that she can't be, like, they can't change her back, basically. So Bright Bill's
the positronic pathways have been rewritten, and you just can't undo it.
The dilithium crystals, you know, they were recalibrated, and the convex sides, you know, it just is what.
Oh,
right,
of course, yeah.
Exactly. Naturally. Yeah. Okay. With the positronic brain.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Okay. Like, I got it. Totally understood. So then Bright Bill does rescue her successfully. And they kill like a lot of people. Not people, but robots.
They kill the robots that tried to retrieve it. But the big fire starts in the forest. The beaver comes to the rescue.
Yes.
With a huge tree.
Because wouldn't you know, this tree is positioned in such a way that if it fell over, it would fall into the river, which would cause a tidal wave.
Well, beavers build dams, right? So it makes sense. Which actually reminds me of the very beginning of the movie where Roz is saying, oh, can I help you? I'll solve your problem. She comes across a beaver trying to dam a river. So she says, oh, I see what the problem is. Let me remove this wood.
She takes this dam away. Exactly. So the beaver knocks over the big tree. They take care of the forest fire.
Redirects the water
redirects the water. Yeah. Right, exactly. But as the evil robot ship from the factory is leaving, they say to Roz, we'll be back. We'll be back for you. The animals can't understand the other robots, which is important. Roz can understand both.
Right.
So the animals are like, what did they say? And she's kind of like, no, nothing important. They didn't say anything important. But she kind of realizes that if she stays, they're going to continue to be under threat, and that she'll always be a danger to them. So she has to go back at some point.
So does she go back at the end or no?
She does. She goes. I don't think we get a scene of her going back. We just know that she does go back, and she basically has a conversation with Brightbow where she's like, you know, I have to leave for the safety of everyone, but like, I'll never truly leave you in your heart, kind of thing. You know?
Right, that's right.
So she goes back, and then what we get is a scene which assumedly would be the following year during migration, where the geese stop by the same factory we saw, the same like indoor greenhouse situation we saw. Yeah. And they land and they sneak around, and Brightbill finds a robot he recognizes as Roz and introduces himself, and it is Roz, and she remembers him and she picks him up and they hug.
Right.
And that is the end of the movie, which could have been a really, really sad ending if she did not recognize him. I was like on the edge of my seat. I'm like, are you going to kill me now, DreamWorks? Or are you giving me hope for the future? That's pretty much the plot of the movie. It's an excellent movie. If you haven't seen it and you've gotten this far in the episode, you should go watch it. It's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, it's quite a bit of action.
Yeah. So I have a few complaints. Can I lodge my complaints?
Okay, lodge your complaints.
Overwhelmingly excellent movie, worth the watch, would watch again. It has a smidge of a pacing problem. It's a little bit too long. And I wonder how long the actual runtime is.
It's less than 2 hours.
It's definitely less than 2 hours, but it felt, particularly in the beginning, so there's this whole section in the beginning that I want to say was like 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes, when she's just running around the woods. And that's before she does the sequence of like learning their language. And nothing really happens until she learns the language. So it's really just like a collection of scenes that are like funny or like cute, like in isolation, but just kind of like sequenced together for like too long. And that could have been like 5 minutes or less, like easily could have been like 5 minutes or less before we got to her learning the language. So I do think the pacing was a little wonky getting us to the problem, because like the problem was, oops, I killed this nest and now what do I do? The problem was the clash of technology and nature, right? Like, but we didn't get there for quite a ways in the beginning. And then the teaching Brightbill the three things for the task, also having something that is a goal that is really made up of three goals is kind of hard to pace in a singular, like, movie kind of circumstance, like in a TV show or a novel where there's chapters, that's a little bit easier to do that. But in a movie, it's a little bit harder to pace. And really, it was like, teach him how to eat, took a very short amount of time. Right. And the answer was he eats worms. Then teach him how to swim was kind of never really answered. Like he just eventually was able to swim, but like Roz didn't really teach him that. And then teach him how to fly took up like a big bulk of act two, of like that center of the movie. So I wonder about some of that, but not that it did anything bad for the movie. It was pleasant to watch, but that is the complaint I will lodge. And some of the action sequences too, at a certain point, I was like, okay, I don't know how much I need to see the animals fighting in this burning forest, but I get it.
Yeah, there were like two big battles, which was probably a little bit excessive, right? The one in the greenhouses and then the final big battle.
But I mean, overall, I thought it was excellent. Did you have overall thoughts before we talk about themes?
I was wondering how it would compare to a sound for the Wild Build. So it didn't really, because in the sound for the Wild Build, the robot actually was constructed out in the wild. This is just a robot who finds itself in the wild. But the thing that I found kind of amusing, I'm reading this book about Andrei Tchaikovsky called Service Model, which is about a robot who's a valet. So he's a helper robot who's a valet to a master. And one day this robot accidentally, when he shaves, the master is off by an inch with the razor.
Uh-oh. Whoops.
And then interesting stuff happens after that. But one of the things that this robot has, he talks about having tasks in his queue. And he finds himself not knowing what to do because there's no tasks in his queue. So this was kind of, we just mentioned this yeah. robot talks about, you know, I have a task and I always complete my tasks.
I do like thinking about it as compared to Song for the Wild Boat, because it both have to do with like robot sentience. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something really visually interesting, whether it's, you know, written in a text or shown in a movie. There's something really visually interesting about the juxtaposition of very what we would call advanced, like science fiction level mm-hmm. technology in nature, like in regular, this is a forest nature. Right. The visual of that, I in my opinion, very much helps advance the reader or the watcher to ask questions about, you know, like the meaning of life, basically, as the just, well, like the meaning of like what makes something alive, what makes something sentient,
right.
You know. And I think that's a big part of this movie, is at what point in time does Roz become Bright Bill's mom? Because she does eventually right. become Bright Bill's mom. And us watching that progression. I jokingly earlier compared it to Horton Hatches an Egg.
Right.
But it is very similar to Horton Hatches an Egg, which is Dr. Seuss book. If you guys haven't read it, it's one of the good ones. And Horton Hatches an Egg is about Horton the elephant, who is asked by a bird to watch her eggs while she goes and does stuff. And he stays. And he stays through like storms and rain and snow and like all these things. And the mother bird is like off like on vacation or something. And when she comes back, she like demands the egg back. And he's like, no, you're not its mom anymore. Like, I'm its mom. I've been here. I'm the one who's put the labor in. And then when the baby hatches, it's an elephant with wings.
Oh.
So it's like the point of Horton Hatches an Egg is that like motherhood is not based on biological connection. It's based on, or parenthood really. Is based on the love and nurture you provide. So that's a lot of what was happening.
Right.
A lot of what was yeah. happening here, yeah. I also mentioned before, did it look kind of steampunky to you in a way?
Not really. The robot was, well, maybe. You know, you expect robots to be stiffer in emotions, and this one was very elastic, so to speak.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, more in the sense of like, steampunk as a style is kind of like putting like mechanical things where they don't belong.
It was more solar punk.
Solar punk. Yeah. Right. Oh, that's right. That's what we talked about. Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot. Yeah. I like solar punk
because
a lot.
That's a mixture of technology and nature, but in a nice way, you know, where they support each other, so to speak. Even, mm-hmm. even the city where they were growing, you know, the greenhouses or whatever, they were nice, until they started the battles, they were nice places, you know, just like a little farm with some robots taking care of stuff being grown.
Yeah, exactly. It you said something interesting just there, that it's solar punk is technology in nature where they're helping each other. Does that not just make it all nature then?
Well, you could argue that there is no technology, right? You know, it's all part of nature.
Welcome to the philosophy podcast. But I mean, I think that's what movies like this and books like Song for the Wild Boat are wanting.
Right. I mean, the whole solar punk kind of genre. I've tried to read some other stuff and that what's considered solar punk, and I wasn't too crazy about it. But it was also a book called Walk Away, where people basically just leave civilization and build their own new cities, but they're able to manufacture everything because they have 3D printers, technology, and stuff. So they can become self-sufficient with technology, but you know, out in nature, so to speak.
Interesting. I think the movie Treasure Planet, with the Disney movie Treasure Planet, I think that technically counts as solar punk as well. It's not quite steampunk, but it's not in nature. It's like a pirate ship in space,
right?
But I think that also technically counts as solar punk. But it's an interesting question, and I think it's, you know, back to even like iRobot, you know, it's the question that people have always been dealing with in terms of thinking about artificial intelligence, and especially now with our like various AI bots. You know, when will our robot overlords take over? You know what I want to find out? I'm going to Google it. Were there any humans in the Wild Robot movie? So the internet says there's almost no actual humans to be seen.
Right, they were implied, but...
The only time I think there were people shown was when Roz goes through the wreckage and that video plays,
right, the video
ad.
Plays, yeah.
I think in the ad there's a few people shown because it's like an ad for how the Rosin robot can help you. But I wonder if, I mean, maybe we'd have to read the book to know, but within the confines of the movie, whether this is a society of people with cool robots or whether this is just at this point a society of robots, just that have continued to make more robots.
So that's the book I'm reading, Service Model, is there are about two-thirds through the book, there was one human so far, besides the first one in the beginning who leaked all this red fluid.
Weird. God, I hate when people around me leak red fluid. It's so unfortunate. It's really inconvenient.
So what other themes have you noticed in this movie?
Well, there's definitely huge themes about motherhood. And parenthood generally. It's just motherhood because Rosin does seems to identify as female or as woman. That's how she refers to herself, even though she's a robot. You know, the meaning of motherhood, the meaning of family also is a big one. This is also like a great movie for like the importance of diversity because it really is because it's interesting. It's a combination of the importance of diversity within a system that is still competitive. Because the animals never deny their nature. They joke frequently about how they're trying to eat each other. But they still come together in times of crisis to help each other out. And someone like Bright Bill, the only reason Bright Bill is able to help the geese at all is because his mom was a robot. So because of two things, because his mom was a robot, because he was born smaller than everyone else, and because he was given support from his robot mom, he was then able to go on to do extraordinarily great, helpful things for all of the other geese.
He had good flight instructor.
And very good flight instructor. it really is like a great little metaphor for the importance of diversity within a competitive system, and also like the importance of accommodations, like the fact that like Bright Bill, if he was like you know, he needed extra help, he needed a flight instructor. He needed help learning how to swim and eat. Like, he needed that help. But once given that help, he was able to then pay that forward and not only live his life in a positive way, but help so many other people or animals around him.
Well, you can for diversity, you can also say somebody like the beaver, right, who everybody was making fun of because he was working on this huge tree. Yet when the time came, his idea was the one that helped him with everything. So
exactly. And it's, you know, quite literally and metaphorically, we need every animal in the forest, right? Like, we need every iteration of personality for us as a collective to succeed without having to abandon our natures, right? So I think that's part of it, too. A lot of stories that are about the importance of inclusivity are very sugar sweet, where they're like, you know, and we all love each other, you know, and it's like sometimes we do all love each other. That's great. Sometimes we don't. It's okay not to all love each other, but it's still important to embrace the differences amongst us and recognize when we need each other, you know.
I think that also was kind of demonstrated at the end in the final battle where they were fighting the robots because, like, you know, all the animals were doing, like, different things.
And the robots were all doing the same thing.
Right.
Right. So that, I mean, that's a great juxtaposition of the difference between, you know, nature and mechanics, is that here you have these like super science fiction robots who are like quote unquote advanced technology that are all the same coming into this forest and losing to, you know, this ragtag group of animals who are using their different skills to overcome them. It's somewhat similar to, it's at least makes me think of the Revolutionary War, when the British fought wars like a very particular way. Like, they put like men in lines and they walked straight into battle. The colonists and the rebels at the time didn't have the people to do that for the most part. So did what they called Fabian tactics, which was kind of like popping out and hitting you and running and hiding and that kind of thing. So they used sort of more unique style of fighting.
They learned that style of fighting from American Indians. So.
Yeah. and they use that to their great advantage. Mm. And now we're here. So definitely, yeah, themes of parenthood, themes of family, themes of, I think the diversity themes are extremely strong and very easy to digest.
Well, I guess the overall theme would be that technology and nature can coexist just fine. You know, one doesn't have to destroy the other, because a lot of the like science fiction movies, the two are like fighting each other.
Yeah, for example, Avatar and its terrible, terrible sequel,
right.
Way of the Water. I heard someone recently praise that movie, and I was like, what? Like, on what planet do you live that you thought that was a good movie? And then also themes of love. I mean, the theme of, you know, love conquers all kind of thing. I don't know how I felt about the ending that Roz had to go back and, like, what, she gets to see her son, like, twice a year when he migrates, pretty much.
Take an email.
I mean, because it's kind of, on the one hand, it's heroic of her.
Right.
Right, to say, to sacrifice her presence in the forest to go back to save everyone. It's practical as well.
Just like a mother would.
Yeah, yeah. But it is also sad that she needs to sacrifice her free will and her freedom to... That ultimately, she needs to sacrifice something she worked so hard to gain.
But, I mean, she raised Brightbill, and he's all grown up, off on his own, and he can manage it, so she can go back.
I don't think there's a better way to have ended the movie, except unless they did something crazy where it was like, and we made a pact with the other robots to never come back here, you know, like, which would be, I think, too.
But, you know, Roz might have things break, and, like, you know, she needed a new leg and things like that, so she's probably better off with the... within the robot civilization.
Well, then that's a good question. Is she better off living pretty much forever within the robot civilization, or is she better living in a normal robot lifespan with her duck son, with her goose son?
I don't know.
You know, I don't know. That's the question. I liked the ending. I was afraid it was going to be too sad, but it ended up being good. So did I hit all the themes? Were there any themes I missed?
No, I think we got... It was a really enjoyable movie. You're right, it was a little bit too long. It's like 1 hour and 40 minutes.
I think especially for children's movies, there are certainly children's movies that are that long that justify their length. Frozen 2, for example. Mm-hmm. But I think Encanto is also kind of on the longer side, if I recall correctly. But when you start pushing like 1 hour 20, I think you start getting... Because that's like 90 minutes. I think you start getting to a point where it's like, all right, why... is this 90 minutes? And that first like 10 to 15 minutes of the movie, I think, was largely like, look at our cool robot.
Yeah.
Because that was when we had a lot of the animation of like, she can spin and she can stretch and she can catch and she can balance and she can jump and, you know, all these things that we then got to see throughout the movie. I was like, I didn't really need to see it. Like, I know you made a cool robot. I got it. robot is cool. Got it. Done. Why are we here? All right, well, I think that was all I had to say about it. Do you have anything else to add?
No, that's...
It was a great movie. In the time you took to listen to this podcast, you could have watched half of that movie. Go watch it if you haven't. If you have, great. I hope you liked our analysis of it and our themes. And if you saw any other themes, leave us a comment and let us know. Because I love... Y'all know me. I love a good theme.
All right. We'll see you next time, whenever that will be.
Yes. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.